I was happy to put together something which hopefully will help us all break the clutter of marketing in beauty, which has been quite paramount in especially during the pandemic that we're all living in. So I'm going to take you all through these slides that I've prepared, which should load in a second. Okay. So I call it beauty marketing in the mask era. And the four things that I'll be covering are just generally first, just defining the customer landscape. I think that's changed over time. And I just wanted to make sure everybody's on the same page with it being current. And then understanding how product and media is consumed today, very briefly. And the core of this presentation will just be developing content marketing strategies, how to do it uniquely, how to just, break through the clutter, as well as just ending with bracing for the future. So starting with defining the customer landscape. I'm not sure if many people know, but Gen Z, which are people born after 1995, are actually now the largest consumer demographic. They are much larger in population than millennials. Yes, their disposable income is a little bit less, but I think one thing to keep in mind as I'm presenting today is we need to focus a lot, not just on high spenders, which are typically baby boomers and Gen X, but also on Gen Z. There's been a lot of unprecedented, I think, time spent on understanding millennials, but they've far grown old now, and Gen Z is the population to really understand because they're definitely in the workforce and their mindsets and attitudes are very, very different from millennials. So I'll just quickly go through a few differences that I've found across in my research. Millennials, just definition-wise, 1980s to 1995, Gen Z, 1995 onwards. It's a big population demographic, 80 million people. The main difference in terms of shopping is that millennials prefer, savvy products. Think of all these Instagram filters. Think of all these, pop-ups and I have to do it for Instagram. That is all very millennial. Gen Z actually prefers products that work and are trusted. It's almost, for those who are familiar with New York, it's almost like the Brooklyn type of mentality of this is, I don't care for the show-offness. I just want something that works and is really good. Attention span wise, lower attention span. Gen Z was basically the mobile generation born into the world with iPhones. So their attention span is obviously shorter, which of course contributes to the fact that we have to break through the clutter to reach out to them. In terms of purchasing behavior, yes, the spending power of Gen Z is less, but this is literally going up in real time. And their mobile purchases are, as you can see, exorbitantly more than millennials. This is just something you have to keep in mind because a lot of our marketing, as such, has to be focused on mobile. The one thing that I find interesting, and this will come up later, is you have to remember that Gen Z likes trusted products that work. They are not led by price. Now, to a certain degree, of course, everybody is led a little bit by price, but bargain hunting is not something for Gen Z. If they were to pick between two or three brands, price is not the first thing they look for. They look for something which matches their values, something that they can trust, and something that works. That is just one key thing to keep in mind. If there's one takeaway you have today, is that Gen Z does not care about prices. They don't care about frills. They literally want it to work. And you'll find out later that they're actually willing to pay more for it. So the other thing, just psychographically, is that the sharing culture is very millennial. Sharing photos, sharing my look, my outfit of the day, or just what I'm eating today. That's very millennial. Gen Z prefers to create things. They want to be co-creators. So when you think of how Instagram has launched new platforms for creators, that's very much catering to the Gen Z mindset. And then just in terms of sustainability, which I know has been a big topic in all the beauty conferences and generally all the conferences I've presented at recently, millennials are Gen Z is definitely more into the whole environmental, sustainable, social impact mindset. More of them believe that companies should address social, environmental issues, Many more of them, you know, will buy something if it matches with their personal values, which is really, really key. And most of them will also pay full price for items made in a sustainable way. Within the beauty industry, YouTube is actually a go-to. I mean, way more than even Amazon, which used to be what millennials used to flock to. Obviously, for e-commerce, that's still popular. But for whether it's how to do certain things with beauty, discovering new brands, or simply entertainment, YouTube is paramount for Gen Z, which also caters to the whole video revolution. Why is it that every social media platform now has a video? It's because Gen Z and just generally that younger population is more accustomed to having videos. Like that's just the norm. So that we have an understanding of who we're talking to, because this is the largest demographic, let's understanding how product and media is consumed, especially in the mask age. So I have a lot of different trends that I have looked at as well as accumulated in my research here. But in terms of just what's going on now that everyone's at home and retail kind of plummeted a bit, is there's a lot of DIY, so a lot of do-it-yourself, a lot of home care, and a lot of technology predominantly that have taken the beauty landscape. And in terms of verticals that are selling, skincare, eye makeup, and foundations were on top of all the research that we did. So skincare, obviously people have more time at home. They are at home. They're able to reward their skin in a better way. So that has been actually a pretty good success, as well as a lot of startup brands launching skincare products. But also because just due to the nature of the mask, makeup and foundation has been quite a hot seller. A lot of, especially eye makeup brands I see are doing very well, all the way from lashes to sealer to shadow. So that's really what's been happening quite a lot. There has also been a foray into hand sanitizer and masks as beauty products. So this is very important to note, because typically hand sanitizer is not at a very high price point. The barrier to entry there is quite low because it's predominantly alcohol. But we've seen a lot of fragrance brands and beauty brands foray into more caring and less harsh kind of hand sanitizer. For example, DS and Durga has one at $30. Skylar has I think a soap as well now. You'll see more of this happening as these things, masks and hand sanitizers, are both essential, that you'll see beauty brands kind of offering them. Historically, beauty brands used to offer eye patches, sleep masks, or, you know, these candles and those kind of things. Now, the main, like, you know, accessory product or secondary product is definitely the hand sanitizer as well as a mask. So be prepared for a lot of that. There's also gadgets just really stalking the marketplace. I mean, like, you have 8 to 25% category sales gone up this year alone for gadgets, and some brands have specifically reported 3-digit sales increases, like New Face, which has which won the award for the best product on Allure. And if you just look on TikTok, actually, if you just search skin scrubber or, you know, any like skin gadget related hashtag, you will see countless. I mean, I think with skin scrubber, it was 1.7 million videos of people just using their skin scrubber on TikTok. Like, gadgets are definitely very paramount to marketing today. Mobile consumption is obviously very much at an all-time high. This is just an infographic that I pulled from Hootsuite to show how people are changing their habits, given that they're now at home and on their cell phones. The main things here, because I'm a bit busy, are that streaming apps and Messenger is on the rise. So people are definitely, I've seen beauty brands using Messenger for customer support, and streaming and apps is definitely quite a predominant. Where this comes in for marketers is that you need to be open to streaming something about your brand, which we'll get into shortly, and just have the ability to maybe have an app for your particular brand if that's necessary. Content creation is also on the rise. This comes back, really just ties the whole loop in with technology, as well as with the fact that Gen Z are more creators. People want to partake in doing things for brand as opposed to just being a recipient customer end of it. And I think this, just in a one slot nutshell, sums up the fact that as the generations grow younger and come into disposable income age, they are influenced significantly by social media. So it's just a given. I know that this seems obvious, but it's just nice to sometimes see it in numbers. That I think this was as of last year, 80% of Gen Z is influenced by social media, specifically within beauty. So this is just a beauty statistic. Millennials, 74%, baby boomers, I mean, like 41%. That's still quite significant if social media impacts them. So the form of content creation and communication naturally needs to be very digital focused. So now let's go into the fact that we are going to talk on some content marketing strategies. So the first thing that I told you to take away from today is that Gen Z wants products that they trust, that they believe in, they're willing to pay a higher price, and that they don't look for bargains. They just want something that works, that's almost without frills. The second thing that I want you to take away from today, and literally the main thing, is do not just sell, engage. Because as I like to say it, love is a two-way street. You cannot expect to have the same marketing strategies that worked for the boomers or the Gen X when you had magazine ads that were a one-way communication, or TV ads that were one-way. You have to engage with your audience. There's just no two ways about it. So a lot of the content that I'm going to share is really just talking about this. So the way to build engagement and loyalty eventually is to create content, have some sort of consistency, which really just comes down to your brand DNA, what it is that you make, what it is that you're trying to communicate. Drive the engagement from that, because people are engaged with things that are consistent and that are compelling and match their values. And that's how you build loyalty. So this needs to be implemented, a very simple framework across all your platforms, to the point that, like, if I as a customer, because I always think of myself as a customer, which I am, if I came to your brand and I looked at its YouTube, or I looked at its Instagram, or I looked at its website, or I looked at its package, is it all saying the same story? It has to say the same story across everything. That is where the consistency comes in. And that's when, if I like your product, I like what your brand values are, I will be engaged with your brand, and I will probably buy repeat purchases, which ultimately impacts our business. So the way to start, or just to kind of nurture your marketing strategy, is focus on value-added content. You don't always have to just sell. Value-added content, which I'll go through in a few examples, is something that is relevant for your customers within a certain demographic, within a certain time period, within a certain season. So a lot of, like, for example, Halloween's coming up. Halloween content is value-add. Pandemic content is value-add. So focus on value-added content that makes it very relevant for customers to want to listen to you. Make it unique, make it informative. Original and relevant to your brand is what I mean there. And also just something that drives action to your brand. So for example, if you're just sharing that you're giving back to a certain community, or you're giving back to charity in within the pandemic, that's obviously great to share. Embed that into your DNA so that people then want to actually make a purchase or do something, knowing that you're doing something for the community. There's always this extra step, sometimes it's subconscious, that you have to be mindful of when you are creating content. So a couple of examples that I'm going to go through of just things that I found that the beauty brands that do this really well do. Use beauty relevant platforms. I mean, needless to say, I showed you that YouTube is predominant for beauty consumers. The statistics that I found was that 32% of Gen Z and millennials feel that without YouTube, their entire look would be incomplete. That is very, very significant as a number. And so you see a lot of beauty bloggers on YouTube. Definitely, if it's within your scope, within your budget, utilize YouTube, utilize Instagram video, Facebook video, any kind of platforms that your audience is gravitating towards. Create your content to match that, because that's where you will have the most uptick in your media consumption, and hopefully that translates into your sales. Deliver human access. So this is where the platforms and technology have made it easy for us, because now Instagram also has an Instagram Live feature. So as I mentioned to you earlier, millennials were the ones who really wanted to see pretty images and, you know, usually themselves in the image with a cool backdrop. Go one generation before that, Gen X wanted to see the pretty magazine covers, the aspirational kind of thing. We're now in a time that is obviously just table stakes, but what people really want is they want this relationship. They want this engagement. They want to see what your brand does behind the scenes. They want to see how it works, what happens. And so DIY tutorials, consultations, especially during the pandemic when people are sitting at home, are really key. So for example, you can partner with other brands, you can partner with someone within the you know, within the industry, like how Beauty Bio did, or you can have a Q&A with the founders if it's a new brand or if that's something accessible. I think that's just always really useful. It adds the human element. It's it just really drives a lot of engagement. And for example, with the new face, you know, the gadget that won the Allure Award, the founder gave a very long Instagram Live, like Q&A, which was just super useful, engaged the audiences. And I've seen so many brands do this. What this does is it just gives a humane quality to your brand, which drives that loyalty within your customer base. They just want to know that this is something that works and that you're there almost with them to support them as they're using your product. Incorporate user-generated content, acronym UGC. This has been trending for quite some time now, but now more than ever, especially during the pandemic, it's very important to showcase to people that you understand the situation they're in. They could be stuck at home, or they could be like slowly venturing out, or they could be getting used to a new way of life, or you know, it's very different for a lot of people, and it's very situational. Using user-generated content is almost like rewarding your users, thanking them for thinking of your brand during these times. That's why at this time in particular, user-generated content is so useful. A lot of brands do this in different ways, like Lush Cosmetics shares a lot of their users' pictures, which they've been doing anyway. But then, like, you know, you can also just share if your customers were able to travel, which I know in Europe, the travel was still a bit more easy than it was in the US. You can just share about where your products have traveled to. You know, very simple things that passively reward your customers and your consumers for using your product is a great way to drive engagement, loyalty. This has been a big one, especially recently during the pandemic, as well as after the Black Lives Matter movement. Communicate social responsibility. There has been countless studies and a lot of statistics that I actually conducted the research on myself with our company, of how especially the younger generations will completely abandon a brand if it doesn't match their personal values. So it is very important as a brand to keep it as part of your core DNA to be socially responsible in whatever way that is relevant. So communicating this either frequently or sporadically is very key to just remind your customers that you are there to be socially responsible. I find that some of the brands get a bit lost in like selling their product or in showing like seasonal things, that they forget to do this. Now, especially, it's become very important to show that as a brand, you understand that you need to be here for the people. And so it's important to communicate this in a variety of ways. So for example, it can be just via Instagram posts, it can be via briefings, like how LVMH did with converting its perfume factories to making hand sanitizers. It could just be a call out to frontline workers. or just something that showcases that you're working on this, and put these onto your sales platforms. Don't just leave this as like an asterisk, a one pager on your website. Like, put this out there so people understand that you are there giving back. It's very important to do this in a very transparent and almost in your face way, because people need to understand this. Otherwise, they just gloss over it, or worse, assume that you're not doing it. And similar to my point earlier of not just selling, deliver non-product updates too. This can be done in a variety of ways, but I just pulled together a few examples that I'd worked with that I liked a lot. So for example, 6 feet away or 1.5 meters is actually 75 lipsticks. I thought it was really clever to say keep a kiss stance away. You know, it delivers the point of the fact that it's relevant to the season. It is value-add content, but it's still funny and it's engaging and it's relative to the lipstick brand and the beauty industry. So I think it's just a great example. As well as, like, for example, if you're an LA-based brand, you don't need to say that you're giving back to the entire world. You could be giving back to one specific charity, one specific community, and really target localized communication like this brand did right here. I think it's just very important to showcase. And again, it'll depend on your specific brand that you're both locally conscious as well as nationally aware. And crowdsourcing from your community kind of comes into the same thing we're talking about user-generated content. If you're out of content ideas, just crowdsource them from your community. I think this skincare brand literally had 5 amazing ideas that came from them just asking their community of what they want to see or what they want to hear. And then celebrate diversity. This has become obviously under a lot, it's come under a lot of scrutiny recently. My main suggestion here is to celebrate all kinds of diversity without necessarily calling it out. And I think that's where it becomes more obvious to your customers that you are truly diverse. It doesn't help to just, obviously it helps to have a diverse portfolio of models, affiliates, influencers, but if that's just part of your core DNA to start with, it doesn't even need to be called out. For example, I think the Becca Zero No Pigment Virtual Foundation does this so well, where they just have models of all ethnicities, of all body types, and of all genders and sexualities across all of their campaigns. Like, it's not even a question of why one of these people would be wearing a No Pigment Virtual Foundation. It's as simple as that. And that, I think, just passively, without even trying, communicates your diversity and your brand values so well. Fenty Beauty does it quite well recently, where they just pull models from all different backgrounds and all different, whether it's ethnic, sexual backgrounds, to work with them, which I think is just very excellent, because these brands then are able to showcase diversity without calling it out or without trying. It's just so intrinsic to their DNA that it's effortless. And then obviously use technology to make brands accessible. There's a lot of different try-on technology that's coming on. I think this is Modiface, who I actually met through Irina, the founders, that is. You can try on different looks, you can have app exclusives. If you haven't done it already, just try to have different technology that can make your product come to life, can make it more accessible for your mobile users, because as we saw, most of them are already on their phone, but they're also shopping on their phone. And I think this is towards the end, but be in sync with your community. I think overall, the one message I'm trying to give as well is that really be in sync with the pulse of your community. The community is always going to change. The older demographic will grow older, the younger one will come of age, there'll be a whole new younger one. I think it's just important to be in sync with them. And this comes back to the main thing of don't just sell, don't make it all about selling your product. And this can be done by just creating like mood boards of things that your community would like. For example, this beauty brand here has pretty pink, pretty images. They could be neon signs. They could be my favorite tea shop in LA, which is Alfred Tea. But it doesn't just have their product out there. So it makes their community feel a sense of, okay, this is totally me. This is my mood. Mood boards, by the way, are completely a no-brainer of how to communicate to your community. If you can keep a very coherent look and feel to everything, which isn't just about your products, that is a clear winner. As well as just deliver your brand's core values when needed. This was a beauty brand, I think this was Fenty again, which literally no product mention, no sales, just put up a post saying Instagram can wait, register to vote. Why is this important? Because the brand is in sync with the community. The community, mostly who is within the US, is one that favors one political agenda more than another. And so it's just very much in sync with the community to remind them to vote. What this does is passively communicates to users that this brand cares about society, about the country, and also in turn will make them more engaged with any content, any marketing that will continue thereafter. And then lastly, just bracing for the future. So I've already mentioned this, but technology is going to be key here with everyone at home. It's just, again, a no-brainer that new technology will come out. We just have to be ready for it and be not rigid in our system to be able to embrace it. I think virtual reality and augmented reality, especially in beauty, where you can try things on, especially the last few beauty cons I went to and Cosmoprof, there was just so much in terms of next-gen technology that it was very exciting, but I can imagine that as a brand, it's very overwhelming. But I think just have a mindset to embrace it, because now that everybody's at home, it is very, very important to embrace technology, whether it's to try things on, whether it's just community management, obviously, like live stream, you know, podcasts, whatever you may have. And then eventually just, you know, build and understand your community. So this is just kind of a summary of everything I've said. Keep in sync with external happenings, seasonal impacts, deliver value, be unique, be you, be informative, embrace social responsibility, sustainability, and diversity. The main thing here is just make it so core to your DNA, because your audiences expect it. If they see it, it's obviously expected and they like it. When they don't see it is when you'll get called out for it. So that's just one thing to keep in mind. And I think overall, like, aside from the fact that I think I've really driven home the point that it's that the newer generation is more about trust and less about frills, do not just sell. It's that era is far over. Engage with your audiences, because, you know, love is a two-way street. And that's it from my side. Thank you so much, everyone. I see some questions coming up in the polls. So Irina, I think if it's okay, should I start answering them?
Yes. Yes.
The first one is, what if my company doesn't have too much budget for paid social or social media analytics? Any tips on analytics and also building a community? So a lot of the platforms have their own analytics, Instagram, you know, any website that you're hosting, your e-commerce. Without a budget, definitely use these. Like, use this analytics. It's quite rich in just what it is. Definitely use them to inform your strategies of what content is doing well. What is without a budget? How to build a community? I think it just comes back to being really true to your brand. If you can get a cohesive brand identity, brand message, brand story together, and it's compelling, it's unique, and you have targeted the right market, it's just about creating content that can really engage that market, and it will grow. It simply is just about being engaged with your audience, whether it's niche or whether it's big, because that's what does really well. I think there's just so many, independent brands that have done this so, so well. Like Drunk Elephant always comes to mind, because they started with their six sins. And it just caught on with their community, very, very Brooklyn, for lack of another word. And, you know, I think just maybe even look at some of the more independent, newer brands of how they're able to do this, because I think in a digital only age, they actually are very frills free and are able to do this quite well. Next question is, I've noticed a drop in followers engagement recently. Can you shed some light on this? Oh, the lovely world of algorithms. Yes. So twofold. The first thing is that social media has obviously been overwhelmed, the platforms that is, with everybody being online, everybody at home, and everybody sharing similar things. You will algorithmically see less engagement as such, just due to the simultaneous nature of social media. With everybody on it, it's just less to spread. So that's the first thing. But also, each platform has been coming up with new products within the pandemic. So Instagram launched Instagram Reels, Instagram Shops. They already had IGTV Live. They even launched Instagram Lists, I think, only for creators. What happens algorithmically is that anytime a new product comes out, a lot of the engagement or a lot of the, I guess, the visibility of whatever is new shows up on people's discover feeds. So hence the engagement to like just photos drops a bit. You see what I'm trying to say? Like essentially anytime Instagram or Facebook or TikTok launch something new or even Snapchat, a lot of the algorithmic attention of any user goes towards that. So for example, when Reels came out, in your discover feed on Instagram, there is a disproportionately large window at the top, which shows Reels from people you don't even follow. Why is that? Because Instagram's trying to show you to use Reels. So as such, the engagement to your native content will drop. Those are the main two reasons why there's been a bit of a drop. So hopefully that that answers your question. Yeah. And also just the other more like, I guess, commerce reason could be that people, there's generally just been a bit of a downturn in purchases. So, I mean, this is just brand specific. That could be the case, but that's mostly that. So the next question is, do you think it is relevant to add original wellness content like yoga, meditations, healthy cooking classes and recipes? Our skincare brand is sustainable, is clean, sustainable beauty, upcycling, saving water. Yeah, absolutely. So if your brand is already, the DNA is already to be clean, sustainable beauty, upcycling, saving water, the nature of your brand already lends itself very well to wellness, taking care of yourself, taking care of the community, taking care of the world, the environment. So definitely sharing original wellness content like that is very much doable. And since you mentioned yoga, meditations, I've seen some beauty brands actually partner up with other very non-related brands, like yoga instructors or just offering like a meditation or doing like, you know, a day off from like social, something like that. So there's definitely a lot of creative ways that you can do that, especially if your brand DNA is already in that space. Next question. Is it a good time to launch a new brand as a business? And is it a good time to be a consumer with so many brands around? I love this question. It's, I think right now is both, it's a two-sided sword, right? It is a good time to launch a brand because there's very low barriers to entry if you have something already in terms of the marketing. Digital marketing can be done at a very shoestring budget. Affiliate influencer marketing can also be done at a very shoestring budget if done correctly, because it is really just having a brand with a certain message that resonates, even if it's a micro community, that resonates with a small community, a group of people, and then you can really just take it from there. So in that sense, it's a very good time to launch a brand. Why it might be a bit more difficult is because you have to come up with that unique story, because in all likelihood, it may have been told by someone else. So you, it's not just enough to like say that you, you know, use recycled water only, for example, or that you are pigment free, or like, you know, like it's not just free. It's not just enough to say that. It's, you need to just have a very specific but also very simple story and start from there to launch your brand. And then as a customer, I think the second part of this, it is a good time to be a customer because the customer is really king. Like there was never a time when the onus of choice was not on customers. I mean, anytime a brand does something like bad, there's flocks of like trolling and social media that goes against it. And there goes the brand. And then they have to do crisis management. Anytime a brand does something good, there's a lot that goes into their favor. Anytime like your favorite like celebrity influencer wears a brand, then you know, there's a lot of traffic that goes there. So really, it's a good time to be a customer because you really have that onus of choice on you, because it's no longer a world where you are only driven by prices, bargains. You really are driven by the collective kind of community sense of social media. Next question. There's so many, I might lose one. What's next after TikTok and Instagram? Let me look into my fortune crystal ball. it's a great question. I don't particularly know in terms of which specific platform. Historically, it seems that anytime there's been a new platform, one of the key leaders in the space usually creates a competitive one or acquires it. So when Vine was here with video, Instagram incorporated video, and when Snapchat was really great with its filters and things, Instagram launched Instagram Stories. Now Instagram is also launched, is also owned by Facebook. So, you know, the thing is, historically, anytime something new comes up, it comes into like the Facebook family or the Twitter family or something like that. So more than looking at the platform, I look to see what the trend is. So the trend right now seems to be augmented reality, virtual reality. So, you know, face filters, music kind of videos, which can cause transformations. That seems to be the trend right now. Like people just want to kind of quickly change themselves and draw a kind of thrill out of that, or just kind of create lists and content.
You know,
that seems to be quite a trend. So, yeah.
Sounds very much, sorry for interruption, sounds very much like TikTok, what you say, what you're describing right now.
Well, I mean, that's how Reels is now. So it's very similar. And so in terms of what's next, I mean, this is where I just like to keep, you know, with the pulse of the audience. It seems that community sourced content, it seems to be very trending. So, you know, if people want to do, not so much like from the influencer side where they want to follow one person's thing, but if there's a group of people doing something, they want to do the same thing. So I don't know if that's going to become a platform, maybe it already is, but you know, the way I look at what's next is just to keep really with the pulse of the audience, to really understand what it is that they like doing. Like my life hack for this is just literally observing people when they have nothing to do, because it's what you do when you have nothing to do which dictates your choices of what you will spend your time on, according to me, I think it's pretty true. So that's how kind of like, you know, the whole sharing concept of Instagram was born. That's how the whole social network of Facebook was born. It was just to keep in touch with people, really, because any element of human behavior is eventually just monetized as ads by Facebook anyway. So so just keep in pulse with the audience, and you'll see what's next. All right. So also, do you think it's a good idea to have a spokesperson, not a huge celebrity, but someone a little bit famous, like an Olympics gymnast? Any kind of advocate for your brand is always helpful to have. I mean, if they have a breadth of an audience that resonates with your brand values, that's always helpful to have. Obviously this needs to be dictated by two things. Your brand's core values, do they match with said person? It just needs to be a very clear match. Otherwise, it just doesn't work. And we all know many cases when there were celebrities or influencers that had to be axed from certain brands because their core values or something in their history just didn't match. The main thing to remember here is that if you have a spokesperson as opposed to an influencer, if you have a spokesperson who lives and breathes your brand, it just needs to be very clear that even the things that they do off camera will impact your brand. That's the main thing that you want to just be mindful of. But if you're ever debating between having a spokesperson and influencers, it's sometimes a little bit more budget friendly to have influencers, and also lower risk sometimes to have a group of influencers, because it's just, again, the crowd thing. So that could work. And then next question, what is your point of view on Generation X, the one after boomers but before millennials? It's funny because I was at a conference earlier this year, right before the pandemic, I was at a conference where someone asked, what about Generation X, the generation nobody likes to talk about? And I'll just give you the same answer. The thing is, this is the generation that was after the boomers but before millennials. these generations aren't just made up, right? There is science and fact that goes into them, usually driven by technology. Millennials essentially are the way they are because they are the mobile phone generation. Boomers are the way they are is because they're the TV magazine generation. Gen X is the internet generation. Gen X kind of was born around the time when the internet was coming to prevalence. Now, the thing is, without a mobile phone, without social media, the internet was not necessarily too much different from a magazine or a television. It was just another way to engage, right? It's only when social media and this whole two-way engagement came in is when the usage of the internet started becoming more different. And hence, millennials are very different in how they engage with brands compared to the pre-mobile phone era, the pre-social media era. That's the reason why Gen X isn't talked about so much, because just being of the internet age was not different enough from being from the TV and magazine age. So that's why that generation is sometimes forgotten, just only because it was just not that different. Well, I'm forgetting the question in my like derail. What is your point of view on Gen X? I think Gen X is one of those generations that has become like an older millennial, a younger boomer. Over time, you see that like they all embrace social media just in varying degrees. They all kind of are one step behind their Gen Z millennial counterparts. So like 5 years ago when Instagram was the number one thing for the younger millennial audiences, Facebook was the number one thing for boomers and Gen X. Now, when TikTok is, and also Snapchat, are number one for Gen Z, millennials are still on Instagram, but boomers have really come into Instagram again. So I think it's just it's just a transitional shift. Another question. I feel like streaming is a new thing for US and Europe, and it proves to be very popular in Asia so far. I don't know if this is a question or a comment, but yeah, it is. Streaming is very popular. It has been popular for quite some time now, ever since you know, YouTubers really took it to themselves to educate and enlighten their audiences. Influencers used it all the time. So it's definitely very much here to stay. And that's why the examples that I showed you of founders showing how their products are made was very useful. I think this is a follow-up from before. Can it be both spokesperson and influencers? Absolutely. When you do have more advocates for your brand, the main advice is they all need to be saying the same message. They all need to be singing the same song. Where I've seen it go different is where the influencers are doing one thing and the spokesperson is doing something else. Ideally, it's the same. It's the same core brand identity embodied in different people. So as long as that's the case, then it's just a matter of finding the right people and then allocating the right amount of budget to them, very mechanical almost, to make sure that, that you know, it's the same story to everybody.